This is WFHB Bloomington, Indiana, volunteer-powered community radio at 91.3 FM for South Central Indiana, also at 98.1 in Bloomington, 100.7 in Brown County, 106.3 in Ellettsville, and online at WFHB.org. In this special moth-inspired oral storytelling project, ninth grade students at the Academy of Science and Entrepreneurship share their narratives with us.
All right, so we're going to have the first person come up, which is Gray Jordan. And let's see. All right, so Gray likes to eat food and may currently be eating food as I am introducing him. Most likely pretzels. That's a no, so we're okay. All right, and the title of their story is Manatees and Blueberries.
Okay. I was 8 years old in Fort Thomas, Kentucky. Not gonna lie, it is a town you've probably never heard of before. It's riddled with racist, white, middle-aged golfers. Well, I lived there for 4 years, believe it or not. The entire time there, I was very, very weird. Well, weird in that town basically means I didn't own a Subaru, and I didn't play football, I wasn't a member of the PTA. I wore basketball shorts. So to them, I was like a whole other species of 8-year-old girl. So my mom had tattoos, I wore basketball shorts, and I already sound like the beginning of a Taylor Swift song. So one day, I'm sitting at the park, alone, naturally. I'm on the swings, my little 8-year-old self all by myself, and down the concrete steps comes Annie Perkins. Not gonna lie, she was a little plain, long brown hair, and a jacket that spelled OMG in sequins, which made her, by default, the coolest person in the universe. So she comes up to me and she sits down on the swing and none of us say anything. And then slowly she looks at her feet and then she looks at me. She says, "What's your favorite animal?" And I immediately knew I was going to lie my way through this entire thing. So I look at her and I say, "What's yours?" And she looks at the floor again and she looks at me and she says, "Manatees, the river cows." I was just like, "Me too, man. Me too." She's like, "Really? Nice." And I thought I was in the clear, you know? Because we got through the questions, we got over that hurdle. And then she looks at me again. She's like, "What's your favorite fruit?" And I was like, "Oh my God, stop asking me questions." At this point, I'm having a tiny heart attack. I'm sweating through my Live, Laugh, Love t-shirt. And I ask, "What's yours?" Because wasn't my little 8-year-old self a genius? And she says, "Blueberries, of course." I'm like, "Of course, of course. Me too, me too." She's like, "Really?" And I don't know what was wrong with this girl. I was not much of a social catch, like at all. So we swang for 2 hours that day. She talked, I listened. She talked about how Pizza Wednesdays should be on Fridays, I listened. She talked about how manatees should be the school's mascot, and I agreed hesitantly. She talked about Eli Ricker, the school's premier nose picker and the cutest boy on the monkey bars. I listened, naturally. I really don't know if we would have been friends, if I had been honest, because we lost touch 3 days later, so I assume we wouldn't. But, you know, I went home that day with a friend and a mission. I had to figure out what the hell a manatee was. I would have loved to share some of that Wikipedia information with her, really. But I'm very glad that we had that day. I made a friend, my first friend, at 8 years old. It was a very nice day, and I'm very glad that I met her. And I wish I knew her still. Yeah, all right, that's it.
All right, thanks. All right, thank you, Gray. I didn't hear most of it, but I assume there was a manatee in there. All right, so the next person is going to be Sam Fishman? Yes? Fishman? Okay. All right, so Sam Fishman is a 14-year-old student at the Academy of Science and Entrepreneurship. He loves science, politics, and engineering, and the title of his narrative is Ramona.
Okay, so every Saturday I attend a Taekwondo class. It's a lot of fun. You can really bond with people when you're both kicking, punching, and yelling at each other. My mom decided to go on a jog while I was practicing my kicks and punches and yells. And she decided to stop by the animal shelter. That's all I knew for now, but when the class was dismissed, I got the full story. So, basically what my mom said is that when she stopped by the animal shelter, while she was walking past a row of cages, she saw an adorable adolescent cat named Ramona. I'm not sure if it was the cat's name, which was my mom's favorite character from a children's book, or if it was the cat's friendly nature, but my mom fell in love with her, and she insisted that we go to the animal shelter right now, right there. I was not thrilled with this idea because I had just been, you know, working out for an hour, and I didn't want to go on a walk because I was lazy. And also, to get to the animal shelter, you have to go through past the old sewage treatment plant, which is contaminated with PCBs. And if there's one thing you should know about me, it's that I'm a hypochondriac, so I am scared to death of any kind of chemical, no matter what name it is. Like, to this day, I am very suspicious of salt. Okay. And also, you know, it was January, so as you can expect, it was 80 degrees, and I was super hot. So I was not happy walking there. I was whining the entire way, and I was grumbling, and my mom just kept insisting that we keep walking. Eventually, we got to the shelter, and my mom pointed to me where the cat was. So I saw her, and I fell in love with her, too. She had, she had five little toes on her front paws, which made them look like tiny mittens. And her calico pattern looked like chocolate, caramel, and vanilla ice cream. She was friendly, and she was adorable, and she was so perfect. We talked about adopting Ramona, but my mom said that she wanted to consult with my stepfather, Greg, first. Again, I was not super excited about that. I was afraid that he wouldn't want to adopt Ramona because of the impact she would have on the local wildlife. He liked watching birds. But he was actually all for it. So the next day, we stopped by the shelter. We picked up Ramona, we pet her. Greg saw her for the first time. We took a picture with her, and we adopted her. We took her home in our car. She was in a little cardboard box with a bunch of holes in it, and she was so scared, and she was whining and meowing all the way home. All I could do was hope that she would like her new home and pat her little box and tell her that it was okay. When we got her home, we put her box in the living room, and timidly she began to sort of look out and walk around the room. Unfortunately, when she saw us, she panicked and bolted under my mom's bed, and she stayed there for 2 days, only coming out to eat and use the litter box. Eventually, she got comfortable with us. She would let us pet her, and she would let us pet her and pick her up, and she would sit on our laps. And we began to let her go outside, and as was expected, Greg did not watch birds anymore. A couple weeks after we got her, we learned that she had an eye infection, and, you know, because I'm a hypochondriac, I was also worried about her. I was afraid that we wouldn't be able to pet her. I was afraid that she might go blind. And while we were waiting in the vet's office, I was just breaking down. I was so worried for Ramona. I hoped that she would be okay. The vet was excellent, and so was Ramona. Ramona didn't fuss. She just stayed calm. The only time she got angry was when the vet tried to clip her toenails. She's like me in that way. The vet said that we had to give her eye drops once every day for 2 weeks. Not exactly a life-threatening condition. I was so relieved. So Ramona got better, and we began to spend more time with her. She would sit next to Greg while he was working from home and sit on our laps while we were reading or having dessert, until she remembered that she was a cat after all and immediately got up and left for no reason at all. It's amazing having Ramona, and she had become a part of the family. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Sam. All right, the next student is Sam Patillo, and Sam is very tall and plays basketball. He likes, or at least tries to eat, in every class. All right, the title of his narrative is How I Almost Destroyed a World-Famous Billion-Dollar Factory.
So, my family loves to travel everywhere. And as tradition, all my family likes to travel a year abroad, wherever. So in eighth grade, my sister was in sixth grade, we decided it was the perfect time to take our year abroad. We went to Germany for the year, and as I knew, my family always came very close to tragedy every single time. For example, my mom went to England during mad cow disease. This was a disease that slowly deteriorated your brain if you ate meat from this particular cow that had this disease. So this was my turn, and in the first week of our trip, we decided to go to the transparent factory. It was a BMW factory made out of complete glass, and they had no lights inside, just because all the workers were working in the daytime when it was sunny outside, and saved them a lot of money. So we went, and during our tour, we learned about the new self-driving cars that were in the future and how it was going to help our community and all of the earth. And blind people could get around by themselves. It would give them a lot of independence. Kids could get around without their parents having to take them everywhere. And we also learned about the eco cars and how the batteries were lasting longer than ever. And the one thing that stuck with me was the facts about the factory. I thought it was brilliant how they made a factory just out of glass. 10 layers of glass in every sheet, and if any sheet came down, then the whole factory would topple down, just completely crumble. That was the most interesting fact to me. And so afterwards, me and my brothers were playing truth or dare, while my stepdad and my mom, it was close to their anniversary, so my stepdad decided to take my mom to the cafe inside the factory. So they were at the cafe, and we decided to play a nice game of truth or dare in this expensive factory. And obviously it was not the best idea. I didn't have a lot of great ideas. I always liked business, and I thought of selling candy bars to drunk college kids. That was one of my great ideas. So we played truth or dare, and I dared my brother to push one of the decorative metal balls near the fountain. Just push it. And he said, okay. It was about the size of a yoga ball, and his 7-year-old arms obviously couldn't push it because it was made of metal. But in my head, I thought, maybe it's cemented to the ground some way. It's stuck on the ground. And so my dare was to kick a ball as hard as I could. And so I wind up for this kick, who's about the size of a softball. And as I kick the ball goes flying through the air right at a sheet of glass. So as the ball is going through the air, everything stops. And I'm just thinking in my head, wow, everything's going to topple down. If I do survive, I'm going to be billions of dollars in debt just because of I'm in this big glass cylinder. And everything's, all the cars are going to come down, all the new self-driving cars, all the electronic new inventive cars are going to come down on top of me. And that's only if I do survive. And so as this ball hits the glass, it breaks one sheet of glass, thankfully, out of 10, and slowly rolls into a nearby fountain. And as the ball rolls in the fountain, it sinks to the bottom, and a janitor comes out and starts yelling at us. This was our first week in Germany, and we didn't speak any German. Of course, we practiced our Rosetta Stone before we came, but we didn't speak any German. So we did not know what she's saying, and thankfully, my stepdad and my mom came back from the cafe at that time, and we quickly walked towards the exit, never to return to the BMW factory.
So are you, like, banned from Germany now or something? Alrighty. Thank you, Sam. All right, so the next person who's going to come up is Reagan Knight. Reagan Knight is a social butterfly, and "beat the devil out of it" is her favorite Bob Ross quote. Okay, all right. And her story is called The Milk Story. Where is she? There she is. All right.
All right, my story starts off in Corpus Christi, Texas. It's 97 degrees outside, everything's great, it's super hot, me and my little happy self, I'm 7 years old, and I'm wearing tank top and shorts, I'm living my best life. And my mom, she was like, "Hey Reagan, let's go in the car." And me and my brother hop in the car, we fight in the yard, and because he wanted to be in the front seat, but I did too, so we're rolling in the grass, my mom starts yelling at us. My brother pushes me down and gets in the front seat. I'm like, darn. So I sit in the back seat and I'm just like, okay. And my mom says, "Reagan, Brandon, we're gonna move again." And I'm like, okay. And probably I should have noticed that we were gonna move because we didn't have furniture or stuff in our house, but I didn't think anything of it. I was like, stuff's gone. Okay. And so we're in the car. My mom's like, "We're going to stop at Home Depot to get some paint because no one's going to buy our house because your room is periwinkle, Reagan." And I'm like, okay. So we get the paint and we're in the car. And my mom's like, "Reagan, do you want anything from the store?" And I'm like, "Yeah, can we get some milk? I want milk." She's like, "Yeah, sure." So we get out and my mom takes a really sharp turn into the HEB parking lot. And she's like, "Oh, no." So her and my brother hop out of the car really fast to check the paint because they wanted to make sure it didn't spill all over the trunk or explode. And we're like, okay. And they were in there back there really fast and we're looking at it. And I wanted to do it too because they were like, that looked important. They looked like they were big, they were adults. They're like, ooh, I got to do that too. That looks important. So I hop out of the car, my little short self, waddle into the back of the trunk. And I stick my head in, my whole head in the trunk. And my mom's talking to my brother, looking the other way, just talking to my brother. And as she's talking, she closes the trunk on my head as my whole head is in the car. And my head slams. She realizes there's something in the way. And she turns around, and I'm sitting on the cement of the HEB parking lot, bleeding. And my mom freaks out and is rushing towards me, freaking out. And my brother's just standing there like, oh, kind of just in terror, just kind of like, okay. And my mom rushes us in the car. She's panicking. She's freaking out and driving on the highway. She was speeding very fast and she's driving us home. She's saying, "Do you need to go to the hospital? Or do you need to go to the hospital?" And I wasn't freaking out. I was just sitting in the back seat holding a napkin to my forehead because I'm bleeding, but like I was fine. And then I scream at my mom really fast, and she pulls over into this little, like, cul-de-sac, and I'm screaming at her. She goes, "Reagan," she hops out of the car, jumps over, pulls the door open. She's like, "Reagan, what do you need? Reagan, what do you need?" And I'm like, "Mom, we didn't get the milk." And my mom naturally rolls her eyes, drives the car home. My dad realizes I need stitches, drives me to the hospital. A few hours later, I get home. And I'm like getting ready to sit on this little pull-out futon couch, and my mom, and then I'm like, "Wait, Mom." She's like, "Don't worry, I got the milk. I think my lesson of the story is don't close your kid's head in the trunk and keep your priorities straight. Get the milk.
You are listening to a special moth-inspired oral storytelling project featuring narratives from ninth grade students at Bloomington's Academy of Science and Entrepreneurship.
Okay, thank you, Reagan. All right, so the next person who is going up is Nevaeh Young. Nevaeh is a pretty chill, genderless geek who likes stupid jokes, hardcore metal, and soft, adorable spiders. That's a contradiction right there. Which should not be stepped on, by the way. Okay, thank you. All right. And the title of their story is Home Again. All right, take it away.
So, as far back as I can remember, my mom and I lived with my grandma and grandpa in Bedford, and my two uncles were with us as well. So, when my mom had my little brother Dylan, it was pretty cramped, but hey, I was a perfect angel. I was obviously the favorite child. Still am. I had the whole package. I had long, straight hair. I had the good grades. I had all my teeth. I had lots of friends, and I was pretty popular at my school. My mom and my little brother and I all shared a room upstairs together, and whatever boyfriend my mom had at the time. I never really grew attached to any of them emotionally, but it was really nice to play video games with someone that wasn't my little brother, where hitting someone in a fighting game was cheating. What I didn't expect, though, was for my mom to come home with someone from Canada. I was like, cool, Canada. What state is that? And yeah, but I was like, Mom, you're really reaching for this boyfriend thing. And then we move out with him a little later, and I'm like, Mom, really, why are you moving out with this guy? And she's like, we're married. Oh. And really, there's, as most of you may know, a stereotype about how all Canadians are these really nice, really sweet people. And I guess I got one of the biggest exceptions in the world. And cue sad violin music. I was never really, he never really hit us, I guess, with his own hands. But after a long time, I was really afraid that it was gonna end up that way. He threw things at us a lot, and a lot of stuff that he did probably was overstepping his boundaries as a parent. But hey, I'm still standing here today, so he obviously didn't do a good job of whatever he was trying to accomplish. So we move out. We're now in our own house, and about a year or so after, big skip, I know, I am like, okay, I maybe need to start shutting my door because I started getting anxiety from him. And although it may seem like something that was really sad, I started something that I never thought I would at that time, which is drawing. And you can ask Mr. Turner because he gets onto me for drawing in class all the time. but at that time, drawing in class wasn't really a good thing because my grades started to slip, and that's because I was drawing instead of paying attention. I didn't know how to do study guides. I didn't know how to do the homework, so I just didn't do it. So my mom comes home. She had a night shift job at that time, so I didn't really see her very much during the day, and I had just got suspended because I started yelling at my teacher, my third grade teacher, because she got on to me and was like, Thea, why are your grades slipping? And it's funny because my mom asked me the same thing when she got home. She was like, Vea, why are your grades slipping? And I stopped, and then I started crying. And I was like, Mom, I don't think I'm good enough for this school. I don't think I'm smart enough. I don't think that I'll be willing enough to pull through. And obviously I did, because like I said before, I'm standing in front of all of you today. But I don't think anyone should hear their 8-year-old kid tell them that stuff. But she calmed me down. We watched a movie. It's one of my favorite coping mechanisms, watching a movie with my mom until 3 a.m. and we can't stand anymore. And I looked at her and I go, Mom, I don't think I want to live here anymore. And she looked at me and she was like, I don't think I do either, which surprised me because I never really saw my mom, so I didn't know she was feeling that way. Luckily, after 5 or 6 years of living with this horrible guy, we move up here with my new stepdad, Brian, who is much better, thankfully, and I love him to death, and he is one of the best people on the planet. If it weren't for him, I wouldn't be here the way I am today, loving myself more than I ever have in my entire life. I always feel here at the Academy that I am a really intelligent student, I'm a really good speaker, I'm very talented, and I have all of these wonderful people around me that are so supportive and so nice to me, no matter what happens. And I'm just glad to be home again. Thanks.
All right, thank you, Nevaeh. All right, the next person we have is Liam Passano, correct? Yes. Passano, thank you. Okay, there we go, just really easy. All right, Liam is less of a social butterfly and more of a talkative moth. Pun very intended. Ah, because of the moth, huh? Yeah. All right, and the name of his narrative is the Raven's Beak. There we go, all right.
Okay, so the first thing you need to know about me, I'm abysmal at competitions. If I made a record sheet of first places, even second places in Super Smash Bros., I could get half a page long. So when seventh grade me learns there's a minimum of 3 tournaments in speech team, I'm reasonably freaking out. However, I still join because I will do anything for free snacks. And if you don't, what are you doing with your life? And I'm looking through all the topics that you can choose for speech team. There's discussion, there's dramatic interpretation, and then I look at impromptu. You get 4 minutes to write a 4-minute speech. It's as difficult as it sounds, but my brain goes, no, this is a good idea, Liam, you should do this, you are prepared. And so I join impromptu with nothing but the unearned confidence and vigor of homemade brownies and Capri Suns. So, I'm preparing this impromptu, still doing horrible by the time the December tournament comes up, and I get there, and what you need to know is that this starts at 6 a.m. on a Saturday. Now, you can make me do a lot of things, but you cannot make me go up at 6 a.m. on a Saturday. So, I'm dragged out of bed by it, somehow the alarm clock wakes me up, and I'm trying to catch up on the few hours of sleep I got at the bus on the way to school, to the school, and I do horrible. I'm stuttering, I'm shaking, I'm doing everything you should not do when public speaking, and I get sick for the next 2 tournaments that year. So, 8th grade rolls around, and with teenage angst at a high, I decide to switch over to dramatic interpretation, where you get 5 to 10 minutes to give a memorized speech from either a short story or a section of a novel. And so I pick a couple chapters from Wonder, and I work hard at this. I even miss a couple of the early tournaments because there were like 7 tournaments this year. It was insane. So I miss a couple of them because I cared more about actually just doing well at the tournaments I go to rather than going to all the tournaments because I have no idea how competition works. And so I work really hard at this. And so I get to the tournament, once again, still sleep deprived, but I thought I did well. I missed a few lines and I wasn't the most confident at it, but I got 5th place. And so in the eyes of me and my parents, I did really well. So I checked to see how many people did dramatic interpretation. 5 people. 5th place. So this is such a slap in the face because I hadn't actually lost something I had worked hard on or cared about before then. And then I realized something quite horrible. I'm a sheltered kid. And so dealing with the stress of this and just working really hard at trying to do better, I once again miss another 2 tournaments until the second to last tournament. At this time, I switch over to poetry. You get 4 to 8 minutes to make to give a scripted thing of a poem, but so many people do it. I checked how many people early on were doing it that tournament. 36 people were doing poetry the tournament I go to. And so I picked The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe, because, once again, teenage angst at all-time high. And so I'm giving it, and I find out my dad's coming along with me for this bus trip. And you find, and when your dad knows four different languages, and actually, no, the human Google of four languages, scratch that, and has a fangirl of Edgar Allan Poe on speed dial, you don't want to mess up. So, I'm giving this speech. I'm not blacking out by nature's coffee, adrenaline. And I go to the awards ceremony, and I'm thinking, just congratulate everyone on your team who does well, and then get out of that building. And so, for poetry, the awards start to roll around. Eighth place goes to blah, blah, blah. Seventh place goes to blah, blah, blah. Sixth place, blah, blah, blah. First place, Liam Pisano. Oh, wow, that's really cool. There's someone who has a different name in this state. From Jackson Creek Middle School. Excuse me? And so I go up to the awards and I take this blue plastic ribbon of victory. However, there is a lot that changed me in speech team. Not only was it my first brush with failure, but it was the first time I really took action for myself. I wasn't very confident in actually doing things for myself back then. But now, because of that, I've started to do a lot more things for myself. I've started drawing. I've started sharing the stories I've wrote with other people. I wouldn't even be up here on this platform because I wouldn't have joined ACE. I would have just gone with South, where everyone else was going. So the next time you want to take a job or go to a competition or do anything that you don't think you're the best person for, just remember there might be a bit more than a plastic blue ribbon at the end of it for you.
Okay, all right, so so the next person who's going is Lucas Sons, and Lucas Sons is organized, thoughtful, and efficient. Oh my. He's interested in baking, farming, beekeeping, computer science, and entrepreneurship. I think you chose the right school, my sir. All right, and the title of his narrative is One of the Best Pranks of the 21st Century. All right.
This thing says still on, right? So, if you were a part of my family, you'd know that I was made out of trouble. I was a handful for my mom, especially. In fact, sometimes mom and I would joke that she created a monster, that I'm the devil, and that I'm rotten to the core. So, a couple of years ago, on April Fool's Day, I decided to prank my mom with a new TV Be Gone remote gizmo that I got for Christmas that can turn off any TV screen. So, I went downstairs from my room and sat in a chair wrapped up in a big blanket in front of my mom's office TV screen. I had the blanket so that A, I could hide my gizmo, and B, I could hide any quote-unquote monkey grins that I make. So, mom was working in the meantime, and I used my little gizmo to turn off the TV screen. But it also had messed with the settings on my mom's office LED lights, which I did not expect. They were changing colors, changing patterns, they were even turning off. So mom was just as confused as I was. So she checked her remotes, and when they didn't work, she went upstairs to get my stepdad, Adam, for help. But while she was away, I turned the TV screen back on and put the LED lights back on the original setting. So when Adam and mom were downstairs, mom was very confused. First, they were all messed up, and now they're back to normal. What the heck? You know? So, A couple of seconds later, Adam went back up to his bedroom, and Mom continued working. And then I had turned off the TV screen and messed with the LED lights again. And so Mom went upstairs to get to my stepdad. I turned the TV screen back on and changed the LED lights settings back to normal. And when Mom went back down with Adam, Mom was very confused, just like last time. And Adam was giving her the, "Are you sure there is a problem?" look. My mom just had no idea what's going on. It's like deja vu or something, you know? So Adam went back up to his room, and Mom continued working. And so, this is where it gets good, folks. I turned the TV screen back off and messed with the LED light settings again. The third time, you guys. So, Mom went back up to Adam's room to get him. And then I turned the TV screen back on and put the LED lights back on the original setting. And when Mom and Adam got back the third time, Mom was freaking out. She was like, "Oh my God, the TV screen was off and now it's on and the LED lights were messed up and now they're back to normal. What the heck is going on?" And Adam was giving her the, "Are you having a mental breakdown or something?" And so Mom had checked the TV. She checked the remotes third time. And then she checked the TV screen. She turns to me and says, "Lucas, are you messing with me?" And then I jumped out of the blanket and shouted, "April Fools!" And I revealed how I was messing with her. And then I was laughing, Mom was laughing, Adam was laughing. And Mom said, "Go away, you're evil." So the moral of the story is, never, never, ever trust anyone on April Fool's Day. If you do, you'll just end up as messed with and foolish looking as my mom. Thank you.
I think my mom would do a little more than say I'm evil if I did that to her. All right, thank you, Lucas. All right, we're going to have another Luke Chambers, come on down here. Luke is a freshman who enjoys looking at memes. He also likes turtles. Very interesting. All right, the title of his narrative is Mode While Clubbin'.
All right, so it's the summer of 2014. I'm visiting my grandparents down in Mitchell, and we're watching TV, Scooby-Doo, you know, and there's a lot of wind outside messing with their satellite dish. We're all sitting there really bored because the TV's exploding, and I start to wander around because I wander, and I end up in the garage of their house, and I see a golf cart. Being an 11-year-old that does nothing but play Mario Kart all day, I thought this was the coolest thing ever. So I run inside, and I ask my grandparents if I can drive it around. They say yes, but they have to come with me, and I have to bring my brother. So all four of us climb onto this two-seat golf cart, and we're driving around the yard. Everything is fine. And they get tired, so I drive up, and they go inside. They don't realize that they're leaving my 8-year-old brother and I unattended when the rest of the time we're at each other's throats constantly. So we're driving around, not killing each other, and everything is okay. My leg starts to cramp up because it does that for some reason. And I stop the golf cart and get out trying to get my leg to start working again. I am about 3 feet away from the golf cart, and I hear the engine running. I turn around, and my brother is in the driver's seat. He had turned it on, and he slams on the pedal. I think, huh, this isn't very good. So I start sprinting away because he is chasing me at full speed, trying to run me over. This goes on for 10 minutes. I'm getting really tired, and I'm pretty sure I can outrun that golf cart. So I turn around to see how far ahead of him I got. He's 2 feet behind me. So the world just kind of melts away. I'm trying to figure out how I can dodge this golf cart. I think, I can't jump to the side. It'll hit me in the feet and break my legs. If I jump up, I'll go straight through the windshield. Time starts moving again, and it hits me head on. I go down like a bowling pin. The golf cart is rolling over me, and it feels like my rib cage is gonna, you know, implode. And, you know, he drives over me, and I grab the back bumper, and I'm getting dragged through the grass. I end up climbing onto the golf cart and kicking him out of the driver's seat. I stop the golf cart, and I run off with the keys. Yeah. So I go back inside, and I start watching TV again because the wind's stopped existing. And I'm just sitting there, and I'm swinging my legs, and I hear my knees pop. I look down, and I, like, just push my thumb against my kneecap. It starts moving, both legs. And since that day, I've been able to move my kneecaps around in my knees, and I don't think that's a good thing. And moral of the story is, don't leave children unattended with a golf cart. Or in general. Thank you.
I think you need to get that checked out, because that's blood circulation, all that jazz.
You are listening to a special moth-inspired oral storytelling project featuring narratives from ninth grade students at Bloomington's Academy of Science and Entrepreneurship.
All right, the next person who's coming up is Paolo Unsaldo. Paolo plays soccer on the Bloomington High School North, at Bloomington High School North, on the JV team. That's nice. He also enjoys blacksmithing, working with his hands, and exercising. And the story, or the name of his story is The Pothole.
Okay, so as a kid, my parents didn't want me to go to public school. Instead, they wanted me to be homeschooled. And in fact, I was homeschooled all the way up until this year, my freshman year in high school. Now, some of you may not realize this, but that's a pretty big change, going straight from homeschooling and straight into high school. When I first came here, I only knew two people. My brother Diego, who's a senior and isn't on campus very often, and a freshman named Walter, who was just as new to this as me. Even just waking up earlier is one of the things that makes high school hard. On the other hand, one of my favorite things about homeschooling was that I had a bunch of free time. In fact, I had so much free time that every single Thursday of every single week, I would go over to my friends Keegan and Cora's house to play, or they would come over to ours. Now, I was about 7 or 8 years old, and I just learned to ride my bike, so I was super pumped to ride it with my friends. Waiting for it to reach Thursday took an agonizingly long time. And that's how it always works, I guess. The more you can't wait for something, the longer it takes. Anyways, Thursday finally got there, and I grabbed my small purple and green bike with the big letters on the front spelling out Gremlin, and I had my mom put it on the bike rack. We were ready to head to my friend's house. After an agonizingly long ride in the car that I'm sure my mom loved, we got to my friend's house, and I ran out of the car to get them. We grabbed their bikes, and we headed across the street to the parking lot across from their house. And I have a bunch of memories from that place of playing in snow forts that we've made and playing tag, but this is probably the most iconic. So we're riding around the parking lot, you know, trying to pass each other, occasionally maybe trying to bump each other over, and we get bored because we have tiny attention spans at that age. So we try riding with one hand to make it a little bit more risky, but even that doesn't sustain our need for more attention. So instead, we head up the road to the giant hill from their house. And in my naivety, I of course speed up in front of the group to get there first. And I reach there first, and I look down, and I see how big of a hill it is. And I'm like, oh shoot, should I really do this? But as my friends immediately pass me and go down the hill without a second thought, I realize, yeah, I can't back out now. So back then, I had one of those bikes where you have to backpedal to brake, which means you have to keep your pedals perfectly still or moving slightly forward, or else you will brake. So terrified, I tip down the hill. And I'm going so fast that I can't stop or swerve without wrecking. And that's when I see it. The thing I would remember for the rest of my life as my worst memory of riding my bike. I see the pothole. It's huge. And remember, I can't stop or swerve without wrecking, so I inevitably hit the pothole, and my feet jump off the pedals for a split second. And when they jump off, or when they land, they must have jerked the pedals backwards because my bike locks up and I'm flying over the handlebars and into the air. So while I'm in the air, time kind of slows down. And I realize it's not quite over yet. I can't just flip over my handlebars and slide down the road at the age of 7. Of course not. Couldn't be that easy, right? So I'm heading straight for this old, rusty, barbed wire fence. Great. And I'm looking that fence in the face, because fences obviously have faces. And I'm like, well, this is how I die. But luckily, I fall 1 foot short of that barbed wire fence. And I land half on the grass and half in the asphalt, with my shirt up and a huge scrape on my side. And while I could have been hospitalized, I only got minor injuries, and I was back out to play after a brief break to get a Band-Aid. And that was the day that I learned that no matter how bad things may seem in the moment, they will always get better and they could always be worse. Thank you.
Thank you for that exciting story, Paulo. So, Ms. Moore, is he going? Or is... Yeah. Okay. All right. Just making sure. All right. So, next person we're going to have is Hunter Deaton. Hunter is a natural storyteller and is already a great mechanic. Wow, well, good job. All right, his total title of his story is called My First Hospital Trip.
All right, so it's my freshman year and I'm going to a small private school and I like it. I've been going there for a long time. So about a month into my freshman year, the school closes, which obviously isn't a good thing because I have to find someplace else to go. So I decide online classes are going to be the best thing for me. So I'm doing, you know, I've been going to this private school and now I have to wait 2 weeks before I can start this new online school. And when you're a teenager and you're like me, having 2 weeks of absolutely nothing to do is not a good thing because you get hurt. It's human nature when you're that young. And so I make it through these 2 weeks and I'm, you know, working on stuff. I'm working on like a dirt bike or whatever, and I don't get hurt. And it's pretty impressive because I had 2 weeks. And so it's my first day of this online school and I'm sitting in front of the computer and I'm, you know, trying to figure out how to use this new website. And I get through my first two classes. And then I have my lunch break, and I have almost an hour for lunch. which is way too long for someone like me. So I eat lunch real quick, and it is unbelievably cold outside. But I decide that I'm going to take my four-wheeler and go for a ride. So I take it, and I get all my warm clothes on, and I go outside, and I leave. And I'm riding on, like, county roads. And I get maybe 10 miles away from my house. I mean, I was really far away. And I decide I just can't take the cold anymore. So I go to turn around, and I'm going to do a donut in front of these people that are out in front of their house. And so I go to spin it around, and I'm sliding sideways, going way too fast. And so I end up in the air, you know, because the four-wheeler starts to roll, and that's just how physics work. And so I'm going through the air, and I can see the ground getting closer to me. And I find myself in these situations way too often, where you're flying through the air, you know it's going to hurt, and all you can think to yourself is, this is going to hurt, and there's nothing I can do about it. So I hit the ground, mostly on my head, and I had a helmet on, so that helped a lot. And I instantly jump up, which isn't exactly what you're supposed to do when you fall on your head. You're supposed to kind of lay there and make sure you're okay. But all I can think about is how badly I do not want to talk to these people I just wrecked in front of. Because they're standing in their front yard, and the yard is full of garbage. It's got, you know, a washer and dryer, a bathtub with flowers growing in it. They're probably on meth because it's Indiana. And so I jump up and get back on this four-wheeler and head home. And I get about halfway home, and a lot of the pain's gone. I mean, it felt like I had been hit by a bus at one point. So most of the pain's in my wrist at this point. And so I get home, and, you know, I make it through my last two classes. And I'm there with my grandma, because she's the one that was helping me with all this. And she wants to take me to the hospital, and I hate doctors. I hate doctors, the hospital. I hate going to them. And she talks me into it, and I agreed pretty easily because I was in a lot of pain. So I get to the hospital and wait for like an hour and a half, 2 hours maybe. I mean, we were there forever. And so I finally go back, and they take x-rays, and it wasn't broken. They just said it was sprained, and they gave me a brace. And so I go home, and it still hurts. It hurt for a long time after that. But the whole thing taught me a lot. It really taught me that, you know, if I would have landed a little different, I probably would have broke my stupid neck, because that's just how it would have worked out. And I didn't. So, you know, if I would have, I probably wouldn't be standing here telling this story or even going to this school. And taking the online classes ended up, I didn't like them. But that whole thing taught me that you really need to value every day you have and just make the best of it. Thank you.
We're going to take a short break, but stay tuned for more narratives from ninth graders at Bloomington's Academy of Science and Entrepreneurship in their moth-inspired oral storytelling project.
Fires on the moon, as can be. Men old twist and bend down on me. All the ladies in Oklahoma scrambling to get out of town. Looks like a bundle of love. Better roll your windows down. Drum.